And I think that there's an interesting piece about humans, the way we're set up for survival skills. Where our brains are set up to naturally see the negative more than the positive, simply because that's how we survived. Because if you're a prehistoric human, it was so much more important for you to tell everyone that you saw the saber-toothed tiger, or to have a fear there might be a saber-toothed tiger around that corner, for everyone to talk about this scary, horrible incident that happened with the saber-toothed tiger, than it is to say, wow, I tried a berry today that was so yummy. It tasted so good, and the trees were so beautiful today. And, you know, it just makes more sense for us, for survival, to focus, to just our brains that naturally go into the negative. But if we're not in a survival situation, then it actually turns on us, and that causes, you know, all these bad feelings and sadness and grief and depression.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 79, with singer, author, and NDE survivor, Barbara Ireland.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Angles of Latitude podcast. Thank you again for joining me. My name is JC Preston, and today my co-host is Layla Ramadian. We're part of the team at New Inceptions, a website dedicated in helping people find their own personal freedom. And each Thursday, we release a new podcast where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, artists, and experts to help you do your life's work and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. This session is powered by the Traveler's Mindset. You know, it's March already, and I'm sure that many of you are thinking about traveling. And whether it's this month as, you know, their spring break, or this season, sometime this spring, or this upcoming summer, you probably have an itch to go experience more than you're used to. And in fact, maybe it's the first time that you want to head out of the country. And if so, that's great. But do you know where to start your traveling? Where does it actually begin? It doesn't actually begin when you start traveling. It comes way before that. And I'm sure that you have a lot of questions, but if you could get your questions answered inexpensively, and I'm not talking about some random travel agent, because I can tell you that, you know, travel agents might not know everything that they should, because really, kind of like, you know, most people, they're sitting in an office somewhere talking about things that, you know, maybe they might go on, maybe they don't. But instead, I'm actually talking about a guide that comes from someone that has made it her career, Ginger, to travel and help others do the same. And her guide is called the Traveler's Mindset Travel Savvy e-course. And it answers all kinds of questions, you know, from what to do when you actually get to your destination, how to choose where you're going to stay, and even what to do when things go wrong. You know, these are all valid concerns that many people who have never traveled abroad have. So if you want to go get these questions answered, and many like them, you can check out the course at newinceptions.com/travel savvy. Again, that's newinceptions.com/travelsavvy. Okay, so in this session with our guest, Barbara Ireland, Leo and I go pretty deep into this really interesting story of hers. You know, she talks about how she grew up to eventually be a singer, but due to a near-death experience, also called NDEs, things took a dramatic change. And besides knocking her out of her routine and giving her a new perspective in life, It also gave her a gift to being able to de-loop. And she'll get into what de-looping actually is in the discussion. But as you'll learn, it's something that we all should consider doing from time to time on purpose. Like me, you'll probably be blown away by her story of the near-death experience, but I'm glad that we don't have to go through the same ordeal to have the benefits that she has today. If you really want to live a more positive and full life, then I think hearing Barbara's story will definitely help you out. And as usual, you can follow along at newinceptions.com/79, and I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Everyone, welcome back to the show. JC here, and today's co-host is Layla Vermadion. How you doing today, Layla?
I'm doing well, JC. How are you doing?
Fantastic as you can be in February. Gloomy day or gloomy weather around here as we get and
yeah, I know. I heard it's gonna be snowing too, and I don't think that's gonna happen.
And back up to the 60s on the weekend. Yay!
I'm like craving one more. I'm just craving one more snow, and then I'm ready to start moving forward with spring. I don't know. I haven't had that because I was in Houston for Christmas and I had 90 degree Christmas. And so I really didn't get a Christmas or cold. I haven't gotten that chill out of my body yet. But anyways, can't complain.
And we got a fizzle meetup tonight. We're looking forward to as well.
So I'm really looking forward to that today. I can't wait to see you. It's been a month already.
Yep. Months fly by when you're actually creating stuff. It's funny
how that goes. Looking forward to Mondays, I like to say.
Oh, that's right. But hey, today we are actually talking with Barbara Ireland. She's author of How to Stop Negative Thoughts and What My Near-Death Experience Taught Me About Mind Loops, Neuroscience, and Happiness. And as someone that's kind of had a background in studying psychology myself, I'm pretty interested in this. And, you know,
it's pretty interesting too, neuroscience, and that's a kind of cool way to kind of bring in the science part of. Okay, let's get started. I'm really stoked out here.
But on top of being an author, she is a singer, composer.
Oh wow!
After her near death experience, she became a best selling author again with this book, and you know now trains people to stop repetitive negative thoughts, which she calls mind loops, using her de-looping method, which is something we'll get into and a conversation, I'm sure. So, Barbara, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm great, and thank you both so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk with you.
Total pleasure, and I'm sure we're going to be learning a few things about this and just kind of discovering this world of the NDE, as it's recently been called. So,
Well, I would like to, I'm really curious to know more about the mind looping and the neurosciences, because I have an engineering background, so. But before we jump into the work, I think we always wanted to know a little bit about you. We always do this, always before the show. We like to always kind of get a background check on what you do. And so I see that you're a singer, and we just mentioned that you're a composer, a writer, mentor. But tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did this journey as an entrepreneur begin?
You know, I would say curiosity is a quality that's been one of my most favored values ever since I was a tiny kid. Whenever I was curious about something, I dive into it full on.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I've become a filmmaker. I play, four or five instruments. I sing. I compose. I did wilderness survival. Dog training.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, when I'm interested in something, I don't just go, oh, that's cool. I go, how can I learn this? I need
that's
to go
cool.
learn it. And so that has led to, I guess there's that term, serial entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
You know, when I was a little child, I would draw art on cards and sell them, take my wagon around and bring them to neighbors' houses and sell my cards. I played harp when I was 9. I wrote a book for beginning harpists that's still used today. And I was, when I was, 12 or something, I was playing at the NBC affiliate on their documentaries. And I actually have a really funny story. Do you remember the old rock band called Heart?
Yeah. Yeah. Where they have one ballad.
Yeah.
That everybody knows him for? Yeah.
Yes. Well, one day I got a phone call from Harp, from their guitar player, Roger Fisher. He said, "Hey, I heard you're a harpist. We're doing an album. We'd like you to play on it." And I got, you know, of course, excited. I think I was 14 at the time. And I said, "Sure." I said, "Well," after we talked about the whole thing, I said, "So how much will I be paid?" And he said, "Well, we thought you would just want to do it, and there's no payment." And I was like, "What?" And I said, "Not even $25?
Yeah.
And he said, "Hold on a second." And I could hear him talking to Ann and Nancy Wilson and like all these guys. And he comes back, "Well, no, we really would like you to do it. We'll move your harp here. You know, you don't have to do that." And I was like, "Well, then I refused.
Yeah. Good job.
Yeah, right?
You're speaking business at a young age.
Right.
And what do they say?
They were completely perplexed that a 14-year-old wouldn't hang out with the rock stars, and we hung up. That was that. So I didn't play on their album, but I don't care.
Wow.
And then I went into film production. I had my own film production company. I did dog training and
So did you go to what did you go to school for?
For film.
Yeah,
I went to film. At NYU.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. Oh, you know what? I did not know this, but NYU is a private school.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I mean, I lived in New York City for a year and working on the Tappan Zee Bridge. And so I talked to a bunch of people and I'm like, I did not know that the NYU was a private school. But keep going. It's awesome.
Yeah. So then I've played music ever since I was young, but I was actually a punk rocker for years in my teens and a lot of my 20s. So I played in a bunch of punk rock bands and glam rock bands. One of the bands moved to New York. We met Andy Warhol. It was just amazing, crazy time there in New York. But through that, I met Stone Gossard from the band Pearl Jam. And I ended up being a singer with him in a side band. I think we started in 2007. And so I got to tour with him and record with him. And that was just amazing. And then he kept telling me, "You are ready to do your own music. You're a composer. You sing great." And I was just so nervous. But I ended up taking his advice. I put out a couple albums of my own music. I've just been a serial entrepreneur. I just love diving into a bunch of things.
Wow. Very, very inspirational. Did you have any creative influences as you were growing up, or were you just this? You just happened to be that problem child that your parents, who were maybe doing their own thing. What was that like?
I had problem parents, I wasn't the problem child, not in a bad way, but as far as that, our whole family was problem child artists. So, they weren't problems, though. I didn't mean it that way. But both my parents are artists. They're painters. My brother is a professional drummer and musician on other instruments, but mainly drums. So I grew up with this completely wildly creative home, which made it very bizarre a lot of the times and not your standard home. But on the other hand, in fact, I just sent a card to my dad last week thanking him for always encouraging me to try any kind of an artistic endeavor that I was interested in, because it led to me actually doing that. He'd always say, I'd say, "Dad, how do I draw an airplane?" You know, when I was a kid, and he'd say, "You know how to draw an airplane, just draw it. And I would draw something and he said, "That was great." You know, he's like, he didn't ever tell me I couldn't do a creative thing. So that was my main creative influence. I had other ones. I loved Fellini, the filmmaker. I saw a film when I was 8 years old that just completely spun my world around when I saw this film by Fellini called Toby Dammit. And I got my first film camera then after I saw that. So yeah, there was a lot of creative influences.
That's really good. That's really awesome. And it kind of reminds me of my childhood a little bit because my parents didn't give me a lot of toys. We were not allowed to watch a lot of TV, so we would play in the backyard and we'd play house, and I would just make things out of dirt all the time.
Awesome.
You know, I was a dirt kid.
Good. Yeah. I love it especially when girls aren't afraid of dirt. I'm like, get in the dirt. It's cool.
Yes. So one thing I wanted to ask you was, you know, you said influencers as your parents, but did you ever have any mentors along the way? Because it sounds like you were around a lot of influential people growing up outside of your home.
You know, I did have influencers. One of my biggest influences was my harp teacher when I was 9. She was a super eccentric, larger than life, really mysterious, funny woman, but she was intimidating to the point where my mom would take a walk with me around the block before, when we got to her place a little early, just to calm me down before I even went in for my lesson, because she was so intense. But she was a huge influence because she believed in me. She saw that I was composing and ended up helping me release my first book of music. She would do really odd things too. Like at the end of a lesson, she'd sit down and we'd just have a little chat. She said, you know, Barbara, I played harp at a seance last week. And my eyes would get all big. And I'm 9 years old. I'm like, what was it like? She said, while I was playing harp, I looked down and there was a snowball at my feet. And I reached down to grab it and the snowball disappeared. And I'd just be like, what? And like, there were so many stories like that I could tell you that she would tell me. But so besides just the creativity of music, she led a creative life. And I really appreciated that.
Wow. Yeah, I got to say that there's some people that have been in my life that, you know, at the time I just thought that they were like pretty much drill sergeants. And, you know, they instilled into me some of the work ethic that I have. And, you know, I appreciate them now, but back then, man, I would get so uptight about being around them. And it's just like, it's not my natural, how I go about the world, I guess you could say. And it was just such a conflict. But now, because I have that different perspective, it's very useful.
Yeah. The expectation from someone else of us living up to our potential can be very intimidating, right? When someone sees something in you and expects you to do whatever it is that your drill sergeant mentors expected. Well, let's say it was the same with this woman. It's like, she expected me to do my dang rehearsing at home, you know?
Right.
And it's like, wow. Yeah.
So do you have calluses all over your fingers then still? Or
I did then. Boy, wow. I would play with blisters. It was I did a recording session with a rock band once, and we rehearsed so much, I had huge blisters, and right during the recording, they started popping. It was disgusting. Oh. And I had to keep playing. It was intense.
So painful.
Yeah.
I played violin, and I would have just my one hand, but imagine all hands.
So
I'll tell you this right now, though. When you have blisters, you can touch anything hot and it won't burn you because you have so much.
Oh, the calluses afterwards.
Yeah. I have like a high heat tolerance and I still have it, the scars on my fingers. Like, I can.
Probably from when you were burnt.
I was like, I don't feel it. I don't feel it. Okay, now I feel it.
Okay. Wow. Were you smiling like that, too?
Probably. Yeah, I was like, okay. Yeah. Keep going.
Okay, anyway, so eventually you became an author when you wrote this book. Can you tell us a little bit like how you became, went from, you know, go obviously as a singer and a writing, you know, doing all the very artistic work that you do before. I'm not saying that an author isn't, but tell us about the near-death experience and then what prompted you to actually write about it.
Okay, yeah. It is a big shift.
Totally.
Yeah. And it wouldn't have happened probably if I hadn't had the near-death experience, but that changed my life so dramatically. It started one night in Brooklyn when I was performing with Stone Gossard. And I was on stage singing, dancing, having a good time. The crowd was loving it, except there was this one guy in the very front row with his arms crossed, this big dude with his baseball cap on backwards, just looking disgruntled, disgusted. He hated the music. And I'm thinking, what is the guy doing in the front row? Why does he hate our music? What are we doing? Uh-oh, what, maybe I'm singing really off key. Maybe I can't hear myself. Uh-oh, here comes that really high note. Now I'm probably not going to make it. And it was like this bizarre stream of fear, anxiety, putting myself down, like critical comments started up. And mm-hmm. It was like a radio that you tune in. You're tuning this radio and I suddenly tuned into this negative stream of thoughts that I hadn't heard. I mean, I'd heard my normal, you know, negative thoughts occasionally, but this stream was bizarre. And so for the rest of that concert, I was doing all these things at once, singing, remembering lyrics, cueing with the band, interacting with the audience, having this stream of negative thoughts, and then a part of me observing myself doing all these things. It was such a bizarre night. So that night I went home, went to bed, and so I was laying in bed, I thought, okay, I've had therapy before. You would think after the therapy I've had that I wouldn't be having thoughts like this. And so many of them are about my own abilities and self-doubt about that, self-criticism. And I said, I need to take care of this. I need to figure this out. So I had this grand idea. I was going to sign up for a camp where you test your boundaries and you face your fears and all that. So I found one online. I signed up and went to bed. And months later, the camp came up and I went to it. And it was amazing. The very first thing they had us do was sign a liability waiver that said, if you're maimed or disabled or you like lose a leg or you die, basically they are not to be blamed for that. The second form they had us fill was a non-disclosure form that says you can't tell anyone what you did here. So I can't tell you what we did. But over a week, we dealt with heights, really scary people, fire, endurance things, sleep deprivation. And I would say the first, all the days up to the last day were scary as hell. And yes, I was developing courage. I was developing confidence and self-esteem and totally amazed at what I was able to get through. And then the last day was an endurance experience. And it was a hot day. I was drinking a lot of water. And halfway through the endurance thing, which was several hours long, my body started doing weird things. It was mainly my senses. I started seeing a glowing light around people in a really strange way. Everything, not just people, actually, things too. And then conversations were so odd. My audio was all off. I would hear people who were far away. I could hear their conversations really well, but I couldn't really hear the person, my teammate, right next to me. Talking, she sounded far away. And then it was like audio, like things, sounds like that. And I got tired and I kept drinking more and more water, thinking I was dehydrated, even though I drank a lot of water. But as we got, I did finish the endurance thing, but as we were coming down the finish line, there were people on either side of the trail thing we were on. And they're all clapping and cheering. And they, in my experience, were doing this bizarre strobing and jerking movements that were so eerie. It was like that Jacob's Ladder movie. I don't know if you saw that, and the heads were spinning around. And
Yeah, right.
It was just terrifying. And I thought, something is really not right. And I asked for a medic when I got back. They brought me this sweet guy who I think he had probably 4 hours of CPR training, and that was it. He was terrified when he saw me. He didn't know. He knew something was really wrong. Apparently, I had a really good friend there named Michelle, thank God, and she found me later, and her eyes just popped out of her head. She said, "What's going on with you?" Later, she told me my skin was ash colored, and I had this bizarre vacant look in my eyes. I couldn't walk. My coordination was all wrong. So the guy gave me electrolytes, which I think is what saved my life. And there was too remote to call an ambulance. There were no other medics, so they decided to send me back to my tent, and I laid down under a tree and went through 4 hours, well, 5 hours total of a near-death kind of experience. And it started with my arms and then my legs going completely numb. So I couldn't even sense that I had limbs anymore. I was just a torso and a head. And at that point, I started feeling my life energy literally leaving the top of my head, which is terrifying. You hear things, kind of cosmic things or mystical things about that, but to feel it as a sensation, like a wind kind of leaving the top of my head, it was so, so scary. I was crying and freaking out. And at that point, I heard this voice. It wasn't outside of me. It wasn't my normal inner voice. We all have our inner voice. It wasn't that. It was a kind of neutral, calm, kind of male-sounding voice. And it started showing me these scenes from my life. And it would be like a little movie of something that had happened. And the movie stopped, freeze-framed, and then the voice would ask me a question. It was very often something like, "What were you thinking right then?" And I'd answer it, and the image would wipe off the screen, and a new movie would start, freeze-frame, again a question. And this went on, this life review went on for 4 hours, over and over. And at the very end of it, there was a calm moment. I had stopped crying by now. I was just kind of engaged in the experience. And the voice asked if I wanted to stay or go, if I wanted to stay in my body and go back to my life, or if I wanted to go. And honestly, JC and Layla, the feeling that I got on the other side was so inviting and so welcoming and so calm that I actually had to ask questions to see if I even wanted to come back, which I never in a million years thought I'd feel. But I asked my questions, I made my decision, I decided to come back. The moment I said I want to come back, that life energy feeling rushed back into the top of my head. All my body parts came back to feeling within, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 minutes, very fast.
Wow.
And I opened my eyes and I saw my friend Michelle there, who had been holding my hand through the whole thing and praying and doing Reiki on me. And I saw her eyes closed, and it chokes me up. I saw a bee buzzing around, and it's like, oh my God, this is life. I saw the trees rustling again and felt the low sun on my skin. And oof, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And the what came from that was equally amazing, because the whole first month I was back was like life on life, heaven. It was heaven, because right. I was so incredibly present. in every aspect of my life. The way I ate food, the way I smelled flowers, the way I was honest with people. Everything was amazing. And then life started creeping back in.
Cool.
Yeah. So now we're going to kind of continue. So about your book, Barbara, that's pretty amazing what you just shared. I just got goosebumps right now. And that is, I'm just like envisioning what you were going through. So thank you for sharing that with us. Now, is that what prompted you to write your book, How to Stop Negative Thoughts? Because what kind of struggles did you have to go through when you made that decision to write your book?
So even making the decision to write the book came after, basically the first thing I started, a question I asked myself, and as soon as I started noticing my own negative thoughts coming back into my life, was what was the common denominator of all those questions I was asked during the life review? And when it dawned on me that every one of those questions had something to do with the way I think, the way I react, the way I do or don't express what I'm thinking in my head or feeling in my heart to people, it was basically all about negative thoughts. And I said to myself, okay, this was what the whole thing was about. It's time for me to learn how to stop negative thinking. And I began 4 years of very intensive research into neuroscience, psychology, even cellular biology, spirituality, the nature of negative thought, of self-confidence, self-esteem, all these things, to find out what causes negative thinking and how to stop it. And that is, no easy work. Exactly.
That's a lot of research.
And not only research, not only just intellectual research, but I used myself as a guinea pig because I wanted to figure out what techniques actually do work. And that's how I came up with the combination of the things that I found actually did change my life. And then I said, I'm writing the book.
Yeah. So who is this book for? Who is the audience that you want to attract?
The book is for, you know, this really is a subject that I think most, if not every person has to, but it's just a matter of degree. Because we all have versions of self-doubt and self-criticism in our head. It's whether or not we loop on those over and over. Some people are able to let them go a lot more easily. And other people, like me, looped on it. And sometimes it would be a whole month of looping on something so negged out that I'd be, you know, crying every day. It was just wrecking my life. It causes depression, anxiety. It keeps us from following our dreams. So, you know, even people trying to lose weight or have body images or, you know, it covers so many types of issues that people are having. And when these start shifting, when we stop thinking these things and almost hypnotically telling ourselves that we aren't good enough or we can't make money or whatever it is, when that starts shifting, life completely transforms.
I see. Wow. That's amazing. So now, did you go through a publishing company?
I self-published, on Amazon.
Now, are you happy that you self-published, or are you considering, are you wanting to go through a publishing company? Because I've heard so many back and forth opinions about this. So I noticed that you're a best-selling author on Amazon, so that's pretty awesome.
Thank
Congrats.
You. Yeah, that was really, really exciting for me. You know, since I haven't ever done it with a publisher, I don't know what that's like. The thing that I really wanted to do for myself was to get it out fast. And I've heard that it takes minimum of a year with a publisher. And also I wanted control over what I said. And I don't know how much they would have edited or changed, but I have a certain voice I wanted to write in, wanted it conversational and easy to read and fun to read and funny even. Something, a heavy subject, doesn't have to be, you know, boring or heavy. So I'm happy the way I did at least this book. But in the future, it'd be fun. I'd love to. I have many books still I want to write.
You know, one of the things that you talk about in the book are these things called mind loops. And, you know, I'm going to kind of take a stab in the dark here. There was a book that I read years ago called What to Say to Yourself When No One's Listening or something like that, where it's basically the fact that even when you're alone, you need to be thinking positive thoughts so that you come across as a positive person. And one of the things that I've noticed is that there's so many people that, because of society and how it's constantly looking for the bad things, the things to gossip about and all these different things, that is, being negative is the default way of so many people's day-to-day operation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of guessing that you probably fell into that eventually after your month of blessedness, mm-hmm. I guess, mm-hmm. because, I mean, it just surrounds you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so difficult. You know, luckily for me, I've cropped my Facebook to be very positive. Great. For the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So many people haven't done that, though. They never weed out the negatives in their Facebook feed.
That's
and
smart.
It just becomes so, like when I look at someone else's Facebook feed, it's like, people talk about things like that. They discuss things like that. And it's just like, it's just one of those things. I mean, what's been your findings when it comes to the mind loops and positive versus negative speak?
Well, totally right. And in fact, I'm with you on all that material. I think when you said, even when you're alone, it's important to speak positively in your mind. And I would say maybe more so when you're alone, because that's when these negative thoughts can really start growing, because we don't even have distractions. We just mm-hmm. have ourselves and our thoughts. And I know when people get depressed, they don't like to leave the house, or same with anxiety. And that's like the worst thing you can do. Well, not necessarily, you know, you have to take care of yourself, so whatever way, but getting out with other people, positive people, really does help. And I love what you're saying about the Facebook pages. You know, I quit listening to any kind of news in the morning. I don't start my day that way. I'm very careful about what people I surround myself in my life. You've probably heard that statistic where they say we are the average of the five people we spend the most time with.
Yes.
Right.
When I heard that, I'm like, I mean, that's about your amount of money you make, how much you weigh, you know, how positive you are, all these things. And I thought, I really need mainly positive people. I don't care how much people weigh or make money necessarily, but I, you know what I'm saying. And I think that there's an interesting piece about humans, the way we're set up for survival skills. We're our brains are set up to naturally see the negative more than the positive, simply because that's how we survived. Because if you're a prehistoric human, it was so much more important for you to tell everyone that you saw the saber-toothed tiger, or to have a fear there might be a saber-toothed tiger around that corner, for everyone to talk about this scary, horrible incident that happened with the saber-toothed tiger, than it is to say, wow, I tried a berry today that was so yummy. It tasted so good. And the trees were so beautiful today. And, you know, it just makes more sense for us, for survival, to focus, to just our brains to naturally go into the negative. But if we're not in a survival situation, then it actually turns on us. And that causes, right. you know, all these bad feelings and sadness and grief and depression. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I forget. I think it was Tony Robbins who was talking about that not too long ago on a podcast I heard.
Oh,
but
cool.
Yeah, it's, you know, and it's so like, maybe it was, I don't know if it was Tony or not, but anyway, it was one of the larger podcasts and they were talking about how the fact that exactly what you were saying is that we are programmed to, you know, have that fight or flight sort of mentality. And it's like, the world isn't like that anymore, even though our brains are like, you know, still back there and, you know, pre-programmed to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just for people, for one, to know that to become self-aware that they don't have to do that anymore once they get to a certain point. But to then realize that what they could be learning about or how they could be in, so, you know, doing self-improvement and all that sort of stuff. And then, yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, one of the things I always ask, you know, a lot of folks that are on the show, it's like, how do you reach out to people that, you know, are constantly in a state of funk or, you know, they just are automatic pilot and kind of letting society train them to be, for lack of a better word, teach them to be who they currently are and then, you know, help them become their own version of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you have any idea? How do you go about reaching out to those folks?
Yes.
Well, if it's someone I know well enough and I can suggest my book, I would suggest my book. Or not necessarily to buy my book or but at least to tell them what I do in a brief way, because it's changed my life so dramatically. But there's some people that are, their brains are literally more skewed that way. And it is tougher for them. They just find something to complain about even when the sun is out and they have a day off and there's something wrong, you know, my feet hurt or
it's
whatever.
Windy.
Yeah. Right. And that's, you know, that's just part of their what they have to deal with. So in that case, I model happiness.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily do it I don't do it consciously, but when I, you know, people can't change until they want to change. And I'm known as the kind of weird woman walking around the neighborhood with a smile on her face almost on almost every single day.
In Seattle?
Yeah, in Seattle. And it is pretty funny. I get double takes and people look all confused and then they kind of start a smile. They're just not quite sure what to think of me. But that's how I feel. Mm-hmm. And if I feel happy inside and I just saw the cutest darn sparrow that made me smile, I'm walking around with my smile because I'm hearing that sparrow in my head still. And I don't care if it's cold and windy and rainy out here. So I think modeling it, because at some point, if someone's really miserable enough and they know me well enough, they can come up and say, how come you're so happy all the time? What are you doing? And at that point, they're trainable. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've had some people want to work with me. I do coaching. And unless they're really ready to do the work, to do the homework, and they really want it, they're miserable enough to really want to change, they aren't going to change.
Right.
So
right.
I don't push anything on anyone.
Right. And one of the ways that you do help people change is you talk about it in the book and you call it de-looping. Very interesting. I like that name, by the way. what exactly is that about, and how, what are some steps that people can actually do it for themselves?
Well, let me just start with a little bit of statistics that set this de-looping method up. We have 60,000 thoughts a day. And I don't know if you've heard these statistics, but can you guess how many of those 60,000 thoughts are repeat thoughts that we're thinking the same thing over and over? Do you have a percentage you might guess?
I would say more than half, mm-hmm. but I don't know how much more than half that's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, even half is frightening, isn't
yeah.
it? But
yeah.
They say 70%.
Oh, wow.
Are repeats.
Oh, wow.
And the even scarier statistic is how many of those thoughts are negative. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're 90%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. that I believe.
Yeah, after what you were saying about society.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I started researching how many people are on antidepressants and anti-anxiety medicines, and I added them up as a visual, and here it is, if you put these people that are on the medicines, that are able to get the medicines, not just the ones who want them also, if you added them up and they were shoulder to shoulder, starting in Seattle, guess what city that train of people, that chain of people would reach to?
Anchorage, Alaska.
Probably, I don't know how it is over water, so you might be right. It goes to New York and back. 2 times.
Wow. Dang.
I know. It's really, really crazy. And it doesn't have to be that way because we have this awesome thing called a frontal lobe.
Right.
Which is basically the place where we get a little bit of willpower. I mean, most mm-hmm. of our subconscious is our main will, but we have a little bit of willpower in the frontal lobe and we can use that. So the delooping method is about when I use the word loop, it's when a thought is being looped over and over or repeated. So that 70% of thoughts and 90% of thoughts being negative, 70% repetitive, that's what we're working to change. And it's a 9-step series that literally are changing neural pathways in your brain. And they're removing the nasty commentator, the inner judge, the inner bully, the critic. And it's replacing those people in the head with the coolest mentor you ever wanted, a lover, a supporter. And it's all about deprogramming out the negative thoughts in your mind and your subconscious by way of your mind, and then reprogramming back things in. Mm. And how I kind of... the analogy I use for it is do you like hiking?
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Okay, cool. I love hiking. So let's say you're going down your normal trail, and this was what I would call your mind loop trail or your negative thought trail. So mm-hmm. you're walking down your normal trail, and you turn, you look to the side, and there in the forest, it just looks kind of inviting, and you don't know why, and you get off your trail, and you go over into this forest, and you start bushwhacking your way through, and you're moving logs, and you're pushing spider webs out of the way, and you're walking through this crazy, messy forest, and you get to this cool opening of wildflowers, and it's beautiful, and you thought, I want to come back here tomorrow. So the next day you come back, and you kind of can see that trail you bushwhacked the day before, so today you push it even more. You make your, footsteps of your trail clearer, and you keep going back day in and day out to that trail because it's more beautiful and more fun to be on. Mm-hmm. And that's the positive trail you're creating in your brain. And as you go on that trail more and more and more, that neural pathway, that trail, is getting clearer and stronger and more powerful, whereas the original trail that you go on, the mind loop trail, hasn't been walked on now. So it's getting weeds and maybe a tree fell down and it's getting blocked. And so that while that one's dissolving, the new one is getting stronger. And that's literally what the delooping method is doing in your brain. You're shutting down old, strong neural pathways that are negative, and you're creating new positive ones that are make you so much happier.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's, yeah. And the thing is that it's just so difficult, I think, to honestly go from, the comfort, even though it's crappy way of thinking, it's so difficult to go to anything that's new, even if it's just new thoughts,
Ain't it the truth, honey? We love our comfort and comfort zones.
Yeah.
And habits.
Yeah. Well, So, and so this is de-looping, and you said it was 9 different steps. What are some of the steps that people tend to struggle with the most?
It's the first 4 steps that they struggle with the most. Well, the first 6, let's say. The whole de-looping method is in 3 phases. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The first phase is de-looping negative thoughts. The second phase is de-looping negative emotions. And then the third phase is reprogramming, which is fun. So that's not a problem. Mm-hmm. And so my book actually covers the first phase, de-looping negative thoughts. So it's the first 4 steps of this method. And if you just do those, your emotions aren't nearly as negative because the emotions come from thoughts. So that's why the thoughts come first in this program. And then the last part, reprogramming, is you can do things like listen to this podcast or other podcasts that are positive, or watch documentaries, listen to great music. There's so many things you can do to start, you know, affirmations, whatever, to start reprogramming without even knowing what those other steps are. But the first 4 steps are the most important. And I hope I had a little bit of time to share some of these de-looping techniques with your listeners, because I want to leave them with some real specific things to help them.
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
So just to ask you, the listener, to think about one issue or one problem that's really causing stress and worry or is making you suffer in some way right now. Might be that you don't like your job, or you want to start a new career, and you have relationship conflicts, or money, or health, or worrying about a family member, whatever that is. So to think about that, and then my book goes into the four D's of de-looping. They are detect, detach, detour, and destory. And I want to just briefly go through each of those and give you some really cool things that are going to help help you deal with this issue that you're dealing with. The first one is detect, and that is all about becoming aware of negative thoughts that are going on about this issue. And you may know some of them already, but I can guarantee there are a whole bunch going on in your head that you are not conscious of, that are just subconscious programming. And when you start tuning into them, you'll start hearing them. And, you know, when I work with clients or they take my courses, I've had people say, there's something about your program, it's making me think more negatively than ever before. And then I always say that the first week, and I'm like, I'm so sorry to tell you this, but it's not that the technique is making you think more negatively. You're actually finally becoming aware of what's already been going on in your head your whole life. So when you're detecting, it's the first step, because until we know what we're thinking, we can't do anything about it. And in the book, there's all these different ways to kind of cue yourself to tune into what your head is saying. But one really good idea is just to put a note by your bed where you wake up. As soon as you wake up, you see it, and it says, what am I thinking right now? Or what is my first thought today? And to write it down. Because if you're starting your first thought with, oh my God, I hate my job, which I've had a client, poor guy, he said that so many times a day and he didn't even know it. That's going to set yourself up for a really crummy day. So that's the first step, is to detect and to start writing those down. The second D is detach. This one I want to go into a little bit more, because when you can detach from a thought, our thoughts feel like ourselves, but they're separate. They can be separate. So the detaching methods, take the thought, and it's almost like pulling it out of your head, and you look at it objectively and you see it as just the thought, and it doesn't have so much power over you to change how you're feeling. So there's a really cool technique. It's an interruption technique where you're interrupting this loop of a thought. And it's called my left foot. Mm. And what it is if as I'm talking, just start placing some attention on your left foot and just notice, you know, how it feels in your shoe or sock, how the toes feel against each other, maybe how hot or cold it is, if it's itchy or clammy or anything like that. And as you're feeling it, see if you can actually feel it from the inside out. And I know that's abstract, but see if you can feel the blood in the veins flowing around in there.
Seems a little like the kind of sensing that you would do when you're meditating.
Yeah, exactly. It's a version of that. So you start focusing on your foot, and literally what's going on is your brain is full of electrical energy, right? It's buzzing around with electrical energy. And the moment you start thinking of your foot, there's this cable from your brain to your foot that starts getting lit up because you're focusing on it. Mm-hmm. And so electricity is running into your foot now from your brain through this cable. And if we don't put our thoughts somewhere else, our thoughts by default just start spinning around in our brain. They start going into thoughts. And so that's when you start getting into repetitive thinking, because you're just letting it, your brain kind of freak out and just do whatever it wants, like some, you know, bratty kid that hasn't been given any instruction and he's just running around the store going crazy and smashing things. It's kind of like that. So you're just giving some instruction to the brain. Okay, think of your left foot now. The moment you have caught yourself in a negative thought. And when you do that, you're literally draining some of that electrical energy out of the negative thought. And you're putting that energy into your foot. And it just detaches you from the thought. It interrupts that looping process. So that's really, really, really helpful. And then immediately, once you've kind of broken that loop, you go to the next D, which is detour, and that's detouring your thought to something else. So consciously right. Choosing something else to focus on.
Finding that path and the as you're hiking, as we were going back to that analogy, seeing the new light over there that you want to go down instead.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
Right.
So, you know, my book comes with a free workbook and an audio, and in the workbook has like a list, what did I call it? The mega list of detour ideas. And they're just mm-hmm. all these ideas to get you brainstorming what you could be spending your thoughts on or doing to activities to shift your thought out of the negative thought that you've been having. And then the fourth D is called D story. It's all about reframing situations. And it might be, you know, we dwell on past things like romantic breakups and how bad that person was to us, or we got fired from a job and what an ass that boss was, and, you know, resentments about childhood or parents and things like that. It could be present issues. Or it could be future, like fears and anxieties about something coming up, about money or whatever the stress is. So all of these situations can be reframed. And this is taking the story that we've been saying about it out. So one real quick thing you could do is when you think about this problem or issue you're having is to write 5 things down about it that have been beneficial. It might be that, for instance, there was a woman who had cancer, and she was laying in bed and she was not well. And someone said, "Is there anything good about, or no? How? What is your life like these days?" And she said,
"When she has cancer,
yeah, right,
yeah."
Guess what she said? She said, "Oh my God, I'm getting to read all the books I always wanted to read. That's great. I don't have to go to work, and all these people are coming and showering me with love and gifts." Oh, wow. It's like,
wow,
even something like cancer has benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, "Wow, I the good thing about breaking up, or that person, you know, breaking up with me, is that I don't have to deal with their criticism on me anymore. I am free to meet someone who's mean, who's kind to me. Or, you know, if you get fired, well, you know, I really couldn't stand that coworker. I don't have to hear them gossiping anymore. That's cool. Or, you know, whatever. I didn't like the job. I want to do something else. So to write down 5 to 10 things that were really beneficial about the big issue that you're having starts totally reframing the whole situation.
Right. And then essentially you might want to start looping those thoughts that definitely help you out there.
Yes, cool. Exactly.
Cool. All right. So I think one of the things that you could easily say is something that you'd probably be looking forward to is honestly just helping more people get to the state that, you know, you were after your OA, no, not your OA, your NDE. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I actually wanted to bring up before we got the chance was kind of talking about the show, the OA. And I just finished this literally last night. And so it's really fresh on my mind. And it's kind of funny that, you know, you'd be talking about this, the NDE stuff real quick. But yeah, real quick. I mean, is that, I'm guessing you've seen the show. What are your thoughts on it? I mean, does it portray kind of the same feelings that you went through, or?
First of all, I just say I love the show. I absolutely love the show. It moves me so deeply. It's so creatively done and beautifully acted. It's disturbing as hell, too, by the way.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
It's not a happy show, people.
No. Twitching bodies when people are being drowned repeatedly is not the nicest thing to watch. But, no. You know, it's, yeah.
But it is brilliantly done. And I would say the mystical aspect of what I experienced is similar. I didn't, I didn't go to a starry place, although I know someone else who died and went to a starry place.
Mm-hmm.
Mine, you know, there's something so mysterious about death. Death is a weird thing because all of us know we're going to die. It's an intellectual understanding. But there's something unique that happens when you have a near-death experience because it's experiential at that time to some degree. And there's a knowledge that's real, that this really is going to happen to me, this completely surreal, mysterious, giant unknown that everyone has to go through. And when that happens, there's a perspective change about living life like completely fully, because tomorrow may not exist. I was in great health when I went to that thing. I was young, you know, and yet still I almost died. So it's not like we're going to be old and die of a disease necessarily. It could happen any moment, right? And we forget that. And so there's, I don't know if I'm answering your question right, but I would say one of the biggest things that came from mine that makes me kind of think of the OA show, the mystical quality, is that when I decided to come back, that voice said I had to do something. I had to talk to 4 specific people in my life that week and tell them specific things. It was either how much I loved them, but not, you know, it's people that knew I loved them, like my mom, but to tell her why I love her so much, and what her presence as a mother in my life has done for me. I'm like deep, deep level of love.
Mm-hmm.
Other people I had to apologize things to, or to work to heal relationships. And I think there's some quality to that OA show about the depth of relationships and the importance of relationships and of honesty and authenticity that I love, that I just appreciate so much.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, and it's just the combination of the different characters. Like, you know, they're just, they would never have interacted with each other
yes.
if it hadn't been for Prairie.
Yes.
And it's just like, you know, once she's no longer in the equation, they just go back and do their normal thing. But, you know, I don't want to spoil the ending here, but when, you know, she comes back, you know, it's just amazing what happens.
So. Yes, yes, yes.
Anyway, yeah, guys, definitely check that one out if you kind of want to get more into the vibe of our discussion here. But yeah, moving on into the next question. I mean, what do you got going on in the rest of 2017?
Well, I'm really excited about a new program I'm creating. It's called De-loop Your Thoughts, De-stress Your Life. Because I've thought a lot about stress. It's such a killer, you know, wrecks our health and relationships, peace of mind, our energy, even how we look, you know, because it speeds up the aging process. Mm-hmm. And so this program, when I thought about what one of the biggest things that have changed in my life since I started de-looping is my stress has lowered so much. And so I really needed to share this. Since I have de-looped my life, my health, how I look and feel is younger than I was even 15 years ago. And my happiness level, I didn't even realize that I always thought there was kind of a level to happiness. And I found I've broken that ceiling or what have you two times now. And it's just bizarre. My money flow has changed dramatically. My relationships, everything has gotten better. And things that used to make me really mad and upset, like I remember this one day I had a new blouse on. I was rushing out to a meeting. Of course, I spilled coffee all over this blouse. It was white.
Oh.
And it was like, that would have freaked me out before. And guess what I did? I laughed.
Oh, I can make it a brown dress now.
Exactly. And I can't even, I don't know if I would always laugh, but that day I laughed and that made me laugh even more. Like, wow, this is a big shift.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that I don't have bad days. I have plenty of bad days. There's challenges every day, you know, in life. But the thing is, we get stressed out because we don't have tools to stop those bad things from ruining our entire day. And so when there's these different tools just to stop the negative thought from like going over and over and over, I wrecked that shirt, and oh, I'm going to be late now, or whatever it is, you just move on, you know? It's like life just keeps going on.
Right.
So it's about letting it go. So I'm really excited about that. And the other thing I'm really excited about is a book that I'm appearing in called The Transformative Power of Near-Death Experiences. The subtitle is How the Messages of NDEs Positively Impact the World.
Wow.
And it's written by two co-authors in England, published with a publishing house. And all the money's going to something called the Love Care Share Foundation. And basically, I think there's nine of us NDEers in it. And we talk about how the experience has transformed our life, and we're all giving back in whatever different ways now. So I'm really excited for that to come out. It comes out in September.
So next section is the rapid fire questions.
Okay.
And Layla's going to introduce that.
Yeah. So Barbara, what are your top three favorite books you would tell others about?
Oh man, I love books. Let's see. It kind of depends what they're into. I would say The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. Mm-hmm. Did you read that?
Yes. Familiar with it. Yeah.
Oh, it's just a brilliant fable-like story that is so inspiring about following what life brings you.
He was actually on CBS Sunday Morning not too long ago.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was he like?
I mean, pretty down to earth. Yeah, I mean, he was. It was a short segment. I mean, I'm sure you can go on YouTube and see it, which I'll include it in the show notes now that we're talking about it. But yeah, I mean, he's pretty cool.
He's really amazing guy,
and he's done other books since then too. But that's the one that he's known for still to this day.
Yeah, I think it might be the most sold book ever, or something really bizarre. Mm-hmm. Not really bizarre, but anyway, yeah, it's an amazing book. I also, if people are into this whole thing about the mind, you know, neuroscience aspect, anything by Joe Dispenza, I just love his work. He's written The Placebo Effect and Evolve Your Brain and a bunch of others. They're more technical than my book. So if you're into, you know, the science aspect of it, you'll like it, but it's harder reading than my book. Mine's distilled down a little more, but he's one of my mentors. And then I'd say that the third one is, God, there's so many I love, but I'm going to say for people who are creative, especially, there's a book called The Music Lesson by Victor Wooten. And Victor Wooten is one of the most brilliant bassists in the world. I mean, seriously, people got to look him up. I have the honor and pleasure of calling him a friend. I've gotten to sing with him before. He's really brilliant. And I've been a bass player for many years, but I wasn't following bass players. I didn't even know about him. I'm really embarrassed to say that. And a friend of mine gave me the music lesson. She was in a bookstore, and the book flew out and hit her on the foot. Like, I don't know how. She has bizarre stuff happen to her all the time. So she picked it up. She's looking through it. She's like, I have no idea. I don't think this is for me because I don't know why I have this, but I'll buy it. It flew and hit my foot. So she gave it to me. She said, I think this might be for you. And I happened to be sick right then. So I had a week off, and I just sat there and read it and was so blown away by it. It's so inspiring. It's about inspiration, primarily inspiration, artistic or otherwise. And it's beautifully written. It's a novel. Interestingly, 2 weeks later, I saw Victor Wooten was giving a free bass workshop here in a music store. I'm like, you gotta be kidding. It was a few blocks from my house. This is so weird. So I went and we became friends. So those are my three books, I'd say.
Cool. Name one thing that costs under $100 that changed your life.
Oh, that's easy. Now that I think about it, nature. Just nature, period. It's so transformative. Mm. It took me, I was in New York, you know, I grew, you know, I was spent my 20s in New York. I was not into nature. I was when I was a little kid, and I came back to Seattle and I was like, whatever, nature, I don't have time for that. And then something changed in me. I don't honestly know what happened, but suddenly I was like, I want to get into the wilderness. And I studied wilderness survival and I tracking and all this stuff. So I became very, very close to nature. And to me, that's where I can feel the world of the spirit, whatever that is to people, God or spirit or universe, mm-hmm. is so present to me in nature. And there's studies, I have blogs about this, about how hiking can literally change your the way your brain is moving. So if you have any anxiety or depression, check out the blog I wrote about hiking and changing your mood, because there's studies in there from Japan and somewhere else, can't remember, US, I think, about how it changes your actual brain waves.
Oh, yeah.
And it's amazing.
Yeah, I would almost say that hiking, especially if you're not, you know, bebopping along with some sort of music or whatever. Yeah, it's very zen-like for sure.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So what is something that you believed as a 30-year-old that you now tell yourself is completely inaccurate, and why?
Well, first of all, anything I was telling me negative about me in my mind, I mean, feeling guilt or wanting to do excellent at things and feeling like I did a bad job, those are actually useful as long as I don't loop on them. Mm-hmm. But saying over and over, you can't do this, or that was dumb, or you won't know how to do blah, 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 that is something I did a lot when I was 30, and that was completely wrong and irrelevant, really. So I would say that. And the other thing, more relationship oriented, is that I really learned that everyone has their own path. And if someone's going down a path I don't think is healthy for them, like drugs or a relationship that's harmful or whatever, I tell myself I have one opportunity to tell them my opinion about it and why, and then it's up to them. And I used to feel like I had to help people and change people, and you know, I saw them doing something I thought was bad, I had to convince them why doing drugs wasn't a good idea or whatever it was. It just gets them mad. They don't want to change yet. And I realized people need to make up their own choices, and they'll get there eventually. Mm. So I let people do their own thing.
What has been one piece of advice that changed your mindset the most?
I don't know if it's advice, but I would just say the near-death experience from so many angles. But it just changed everything in my life dramatically. And it led to mindset, a whole slew of mindset changes.
Right. Cool.
Yeah.
What's the secret to achieving personal freedom?
Stop looping so you can love yourself.
Okay. Yep. Yep.
And I would say stop caring so much about what other people think of you. Mm-hmm. And then just understanding business and marketing, if you're an entrepreneur or an artist, so you actually have the opportunity to create an income that'll give you freedom and choice of what you want to do with your time and energy. That's definitely personal freedom. And then I think one more thing would be just cleaning up after yourself in the form of saying you're sorry, forgiving people, or including yourself, and expressing love.
So if you have a messy desk, don't worry about it, is what you're saying.
Oh my God. JC, if you only knew, I'm going through the biggest decluttering right now. No, that's major, actually. Talk about cleaning out the brain by cleaning out your house, home, and your office. No, there's something to that.
So as we're ending today, you know, and I was trying to end the conversations with action steps so that people can actually take something away from the conversation and start applying it right away. If you were to give someone advice, like say 3 to 4 steps, and I don't know, getting out of their own head, what would those steps be?
The first would be keep doing those 4 D's of delooping. Especially, you know, the one I told you about with the my left foot exercise, mm-hmm. and then detouring your thought.
Right.
For sure, if they do that, they'll start seeing their life changing. The second thing is if they go to my website, howtostopnegativethoughts.com, they can get for free... it's called the top 10 life hacks to stop negative thinking. And every day in their email, they'll get a new really great technique that will set them up to start to, you know, change their mood, to uplift their day, to stop negative thinking. It's really fun stuff. If they're interested in my book on Amazon, I want to let people know that it comes with 2 free bonuses. One is a workbook. It's 37 pages, I think, workbook for free. And also an audiobook. It's me reading a short piece by Emmett Fox called The 7-Day Mental Diet, How to Change Your Life in a Week. And it's really inspiring. He's a great writer from, I think, the 19 teens and 1920s.
Really?
An old book, but brilliant. And then the last thing is, if they'd like to join my Facebook page, I have daily inspiration and tips and techniques that all stop negative thinking.
Awesome.
And that's Facebook Mind Loops Mentor.
Awesome.
Or Barbara Ireland Mind Loops.
All right, cool. Well, I'll definitely get that information in the show notes. And is there any other social media places that they can find you if they want additional help?
I am on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on LinkedIn, but not that much. So yeah, I just say Facebook and Twitter.
Okay. All right. Well, Barbara, thank you so much for coming on. It was definitely a pleasure.
Thanks a lot, Barbara. It was so nice speaking with you. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Look forward to what you're going to be doing with your next book and then being featured in that other one that you were talking about, for sure.
Thank you so much, JC. I so appreciate this, and I love what you're doing, and I acknowledge you for all the amazing work that you do, putting this together, coaching people, bringing light and information to others. It's really, really honorable and awesome, and I'm honored to know you.
And there you guys go. Lots of things that we can definitely talk about after that one. Again, if you have Netflix and haven't just checked out the OA after last week's discussion with Clay, give it a try this week. It's different, I'll give you that, but it definitely makes you think. Also, be sure to check out Barbara's book if you want more guidance on delooping. I'll be linking that in the show notes, which can be found at newinceptions.com/79. This week's show note extras include a couple of videos from Barbara. Some of you know that I'm kind of a political nut, and oftentimes this interest of mine causes some, we'll call them disagreements on Facebook, but for the most part, I feel that both sides are often heard out fairly. And in one of Barbara's videos, she shares with us how we can all discuss politics without causing a fight. And this is actually a great example of how mind loops come into our daily lives. In her solution, she suggests that we engage with the other side to learn more about their perspective. And this is really great advice. In fact, recently I learned from the Glenn Beck Show that one of the younger members of the Westboro Baptist Church left and did a TED talk on why and how she was able to do that. And a lot of it corresponds with what Barbara's been talking about this entire conversation. So I'm going to have that as the second video in the show note extras. I mean, talk about delooping. I mean, she had a, it's all there. The third video I have is of Barbara going over the four techniques of detaching from negative thoughts. We kind of went into it into the conversation, but this video goes a little deeper into the topic itself. And finally, some of you, I'm sure, want to know more about her singing career. And I have a really great sample, at least to me. When Maria and I were married, her first dance song was a song that I'm sure a lot of you know. It's a song by the name At Last by Etta James. And back in 2012, when Etta passed away, Barbara posted her rendition of the song on YouTube, and I think she really did a great, great job. So check that out if you're curious about her talent as a singer, or you know, if you're a fan of the song, and there's plenty more in her channel on YouTube. So with that said, that's basically a wrap of session 79. Let us know how you liked it. We really appreciate the iTunes reviews. You can find our iTunes page by going to newinceptions.com/AOLiTunes, or you can send us emails via heyguys@newinceptions.com. Also, if you want to connect with Barbara directly or any of our past guests, you can do so by going to the new AOL networking group on Facebook. There you can find all of our past guests and members of the New Inceptions team. And you can ask us any questions you have, or if you want, let us know what's up in your part of the world. We really, really like hearing from you guys. Again, you can find that group by going to newinceptions.com/AOLnetworking. And just a reminder that this group has replaced the old New Inceptions Masterminder group. So if you visit some of those old links in the previous old episodes of the show, this is where they're now pointing to. So coming up next week, I have a solo interview with Scott Doucette, who's one of the founders of the podcast Discovery Center on Facebook.
Scott's a pretty down-to-earth guy coming from Canada who has a podcast called The Podcast Bay. And in the conversation, we talk about how the Podcast Discovery Center group came about, his perception on the future of podcasting as a medium, and something you should be on the lookout in the not-too-distant future if you're wanting to start podcasting yourself. You know, it's a great chat to hear if you're needing some help with your show or you're just thinking of starting one. So again, that's all there is to Session 79. Thank you for joining Layla, Barbara, and myself today. And until next time, dig in, have fun, and take care in whatever you're doing. We'll see you back here next week.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web at newinceptions.com.